Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
And good evening, Ben. Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone, indeed. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number over the next 27, 28 minutes or so is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. And we're going to start with what to see in the night sky. Oh, by the way, before we get there, the International Space Station is due over now at, 2 minutes past eight. So if you're out and about, look up. It's not a clear sky here in Dublin at the moment, but if you are a bit out and about around the country, have a look up now. You should be able to see it between now and for the next 3 or 4 minutes or so. It's not a bad pass. Yes, until from 2 minutes past eight until 7 minutes past eight this evening, it'll be quite high up. Not bad. Maximum altitude of 52 degrees and a maximum brightness of -3.5 magnitude. So can't miss it. It's going left to right. Very bright. Around about as bright as Venus. Not quite. And the same apparent speed across the sky as a high-flying aircraft, but there'll be no flashing lights. And what you're seeing, of course, is the reflection of sunlight off the huge solar panels, which are about the size of a football pitch. And when it's at its highest above you, it'll be about, from Dublin here, it'll be about 500 miles away.
It's remarkable.
Imagine seeing something that size, in the size of a football pitch, but and you can see it. What's that from here to, was it 500 miles or 500? Yeah, 500 miles. Mm-hmm. So for the bet here to London or beyond, to see something that relatively small is amazing.
Now, if you're still a fan of the International Space Station, you get to see it in the evening skies until April the 1st. And I'm a great fan. No, I haven't seen it for a while. I must say, I must look it up one of these days. Most of the time I would just, like you and I, we'd look up when we get out of the car, where you go outside and you look up and you can be lucky just to see it just flaking in from the right-hand side as you're facing south, and either lasting for a minute or so or maybe up to 6 minutes or so, depending on what way the reflectors are reflecting on the panels.
Yeah. And you might catch some other random satellites. I did catch one the other night. I went out to I take my first astro photograph. I was thinking, it was a lovely clear night. When was it? Saturday, Sunday?
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah. So I said, oh, there's Orion shining nice and brightly. So I took a photograph of that. Didn't turn out too bad for my first attempt. But it did also catch a satellite going over, one of the polar satellites.
Yeah, good.
Fairly bright. I imagine magnitude minus two, almost. So bright enough. Most of them are dimmer than that. The ones I've seen, anyway.
Right, anyway, we'll just
a night sky.
Have a quick run through the, and that's just remarkable how things are changing as the week go on. And it's like, I don't know, these old Nintendo games. Bip, bip, bip. And we'll remember those things. That Mercury is unfortunately hidden in the glow of sunset, but it's going to head for a good evening apparition in early April, so looking forward to seeing that again. Venus, the brightest thing in the sky at the moment, -4, and it's in Aries at the moment. It's the evening star, sometimes called the Christmas star when it's in December time. It's shining brightly in the west during and after dusk, and it finally sets about 2 hours after dark. And if you're looking at it, it's a shimmering little gibbous ball of 13 arc seconds in diameter, and at the moment it's 82% sunlit, so that's why it's so bright as the sun shines against it. Mars, unfortunately, is getting dimmer as the evenings progress, and even this week we're going from plus 0.7 to plus 0.8, and the more you have in the plus world, the dimmer the viewing of it as well. But it's still easy enough to see. It's fairly high in the sky at the moment. And another one to watch for, and you mentioned Orion there, is Betelgeuse, because we, it's the one that's supposedly at the end of its life, but we don't know whether we're going to see it in our lifetime exploding into something that would take up probably the whole area of the Orion Nebula, Orion stars and everything that's in it. And if you're looking at Mars, it's only a little blob in the skies at the moment, but still easily seeable. And it is 90% sunlit, so it's a good bit away from us as well. Jupiter. Now, remember a few weeks back, we had Venus and Jupiter very, very close to each other, and Venus was creeping up on it. It eventually side-by-sided it, and then it took over, and it's a way, way ahead of it now as well. So, unfortunately, Jupiter is heading down deep in the afterglow of sunset, and it's about two fists lower right of Venus, and binoculars may help you just to see that as well. Saturn, going back into the dawn in the morning time, so it's very low in the south, the east-south-east, and try binoculars about 40 minutes before sunrise, and you might just get a chance to see that. Uranus, magnitude 5.8, still pretty dim in this, and it's in the west right after dark above Venus as well, so it's pretty close if you're going to hunt for Uranus. And last of all, Neptune is hidden low in the sunrise. Now, I did, and I have mentioned the great red spot on Jupiter. And if you're looking to see it next, it was viewable in the dark skies at 7:24 on the 19th, but not until the 24th, and we're at the 21st today, so 3 days' time. 6:34, you'll get to see the great red spot if you have a good pair of binoculars, or indeed a telescope that will help you guide your way through to the skies to see that as well. So that's really it. Don't forget about the International Space Station. It's in our skies again till April the 1st.
Yeah, if you saw it a few minutes ago,
yeah,
drop us a note, mm-hmm. Or a text or a WhatsApp on 087-179-1032. We'd love to hear from you. Just tell us where in the country you are or where in the universe you are. And yes, we'd love to hear from you. Now, this week is Ireland National Astronomy Week, which goes on to the 26th of March. There are lots of events around the country. We've mentioned this in the past couple of weeks, and it's an initiative of Ronan Newman, and the website is up and running, and almost every astronomy club in the country is involved, and there is a website. It's called irishastronomyweek.ie. If you go on there, it's a nicely laid out website, and you see what's going on. There's lots of events, lots of talks, and lots of libraries, and other events, viewing events. There's too many to go through, John.
Mm-hmm.
You just take a look at the website, irishastronomyweek.ie. I did notice on it, I was just having a look there now, and one of the things to have is recommended ebook downloads from titles from Black Holes Explained to Women in Astronomy to that Patrick Moore book, what's it called? There's Viewing the Night Sky with Binoculars. That's Your Guide to the Moon. And they list some books also suitable for younger viewers and listeners. What are cosmic rays and what is the sun climate relationship, etc., etc.
Photographing auroras and things like that.
There's one about Hubble as well. Sorry? Mm-hmm.
Photographing auroras.
Things like that as well.
So lots and lots of books out there. In fact, if you went to the library, I'm sure you could probably find quite a number. Because Kevin who said that he would donate a couple of books to the library? You know the way you gather books and you wonder what you're going to do with these big monster books that you have as coffee table books. So you want to just donate them to the library and give somebody else a chance. A text in from Alan, and like us here in Dublin, no clear skies tonight. It's if I was to give the weather forecast now, I would just say yuck. It's horrible out there, raining and not very pleasant at all. So tried to see the ISS, but drenched in Kildare as well. That's for all Alan as well. So it seems to be blanketing the country at the moment. So if you do get a chance to see it, you could text us as well. So yeah, that'd be good. Now, equinoxes.
We had one yesterday.
We had one yesterday. And there are two
Yep. A year. Well, yesterday the sun crossed north of the celestial equator.
That's it.
25 past nine last night.
Yep, and what it means is this equal day, equal light, or whatever you want to call it. But the great thing about this from the March 20th, when today is the 21st, means you can get to see more stunning auroras, and they are coming. And long-time aurora watchers will know that the Earth's two equinoxes, late March and way the other end of the year as well. And the data shows that the auroras peak around June and December in the two solstices. So we have equinoxes and solstices and all sorts of things as well.
And that's just a coincidence.
Yeah, no, absolutely not, no.
The sun doesn't know it's equinox here.
Well, sun just sits there, doesn't move.
Well,
we move, and it's fun, but scientists don't agree on the full colour picture of how auroras form, but they are certain that auroras come from solar wind and its gusts. And like the solar flares and the corona mass ejections, these are charged particles that stream away from the sun and wash over the Earth. Now, we're coming back into that time where we have the maximum activity in the sun over the next, probably next 3 years or so. And we've had some really good auroras, seen even down here as low as Carlow in Ireland as well, but they're sort of low. And as the evening gets on, they go from, is it red to green or green to red? I can't remember which way. I think they appear as red first because of the photons.
Colors. Depending on, well, I think one color is associated with ionized oxygen in the atmosphere, and the other is associated with ionized nitrogen.
Yeah, and they are different. If you are in the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere, they tend to be green up at the North Pole and the reddish variety down in the southern hemisphere as well. So that's, they're here at the moment, and we're going to see them for a number of years, which is great.
And actually, I just got a notification the other day about a very large sunspot facing right, pointing right at us at the moment. And if that goes bang, we can be almost sure of great aurora. But let's see about that one. Now, the moon, we had a new moon earlier today, just about, yeah, less than 3 hours ago, at 5:23 p.m. this afternoon, we had the new moon. Therefore, we can't currently see it because it's more or less in line with the sun. But it will rise, because it's a new moon, it rises and sets more or less around about the same time as the sun. And in this case, the moon will rise tomorrow at 6:56 a.m., at that stage, it'll only be a 0.5% waxing crescent. So I'm very close to the sun. That's, I think you can more or less forget about trying to see that. And it will be due south at 1:15 p.m. tomorrow afternoon, where it'll be a whole 1% sunlit. Again, very close to the sun. And when it sets tomorrow evening at 7:55 p.m., which will be just over an hour after the sun sets, and at that stage it'll be 1.7%. That's a challenge, you know, about 25 or 26 hour old moon. That'll be a lovely thin crescent.
I think you need to prove it by photographs. Definitely, because I saw it, but I don't think so. Very, very difficult to see. It's certainly my most favourite time to see
the new moon
is the crescent. For some reason, I don't know why, it sort of appears low in the west, and you get this lovely hue or glow from it, a bit of earth shine as well in it.
Well, you have to, of course, because it's very close to the sun at the time, and you have to really wait till the sun is setting or just about set, and not long after that, the moon will set, but when the sky begins to get a bit darker, and then, of course, it's easier to see. But speaking of the sun, that will rise tomorrow in Dublin at 6:23 a.m., which is a whole 17 minutes earlier than a week ago, and then local noon when the sun crosses the meridian, or is due south of us, that's at 12:31 p.m., and then the sun sets and twilights tomorrow are all 13 to 14 minutes later than a week ago, and in the case of the sunset tomorrow, that'll be at 6:41 p.m. and from then until 7:16 p.m. we'll have civil twilight, and then we'll have nautical twilight just until just before 8 p.m. and then astronomical twilight ending and nighttime beginning at 8:41 p.m. tomorrow evening. So what does that mean? Well, that means we have 30 minutes more daylight tomorrow than we had a week ago, when tomorrow we'll have another 4 minutes and 14 seconds more daylight than today. That's the fastest rate of change you can have in at this latitude. And the time difference between sunrise and sunset tomorrow is 12 hours and 18 minutes.
See, there you go. We've only gone
past the 12-hour mark. Yeah.
It's remarkable, really, isn't it?
And, yeah. Oh, don't forget, next Sunday morning,
yeah,
at 1 a.m., put the clock forward. Yes, it's that time of the year already.
We'll be able to cut the grass then. After work, would be great.
If you haven't already, cut the grass.
There we go. Now, just a reminder for June, just a little note in the diary that the Chinese Shenzhou 15 astronauts are to return in June, all going well, so we'll keep a little eye on that as time marches on. Now, hypothetically speaking, there could be a planet that could end the life here on Earth. Now, it's not going to happen immediately, but there's been an experiment. Stephen Kane is his name. He is an astrophysicist, and he explained that his experiment was meant to address two notable gaps in planetary science. So, if we could find a terrestrial planet hovering between Mars and Jupiter, this should be able to push the Earth out of the solar system and wipe out all the life here on Earth.
And thank you, John.
That would, I don't think it's going to happen. It's a hypothetical thing, but it could happen because of the asteroids and everything else that's out there, and the odd rogue planet that could be there, like Pluto might come for a visit.
Well, not Pluto, that's in stable orbit. Mm-hmm. But we had Oumuamua, which turned out to be an intergalactic, came from another, certainly another solar system. And so there could be, and there are rogue stars and planets doing their own thing, wandering through the galaxy.
Well,
chances of being hit, though.
No,
almost zero, but they're not.
It's quite a long way out, too. Yeah, Mars and Jupiter, so it's way, way out. So if it did wander into the vicinity of Mars and Jupiter, the gravitational pull, Jupiter would have a huge effect on that. Yeah. And that eventually would chain its way down, I suppose, to Earth and say, you're not of any use anymore, so we're going to send you off into somewhere else. And we'll cool down a little bit, and it'll become very cold.
And on that cheerful note, thank you, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and me, Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. We'd love to hear from you. It's 087-179-1032. John, what about making concrete on Mars?
Yeah, it's... I haven't gone into this in depth. You have a little bit more research done on this, so I'm going to leave it over to you.
There's a recipe. Well, now, there are scientists in Manchester, and they're working on this. And now, of course, when we go to Mars and colonise Mars, we won't be bringing up cement and bricks and blocks, because that would just make it prohibitively expensive. So you make do with what you have available. And these scientists from Manchester, they have used simulated Martian soil mix. Get your pen and paper for this recipe now.
Mm-hmm.
Potato starch and a pinch of salt.
Yep.
And they have created a concrete-like material that they say is twice as strong as ordinary concrete and perfectly suited for construction work in extraterrestrial environments. Now, if you want to go into the technical side of things, they call this starcrete as opposed to concrete. They said it has a compressive strength of 72 megapascals, which is over twice as strong as the 32 megapascals seen in ordinary concrete. And they also made some, I don't know whether you call it mooncrete or not, but from regolith or simulated regolith. And that was actually even stronger at 91 megapascals. So, with the right ingredients and a bit of innovation, we'd be able to build houses there. And they calculated that a 25 kilogram sack of dehydrated potatoes or crisps contained enough starch to produce almost half a ton of starchweed, which they say is equivalent to 213 bricks worth of material. And for comparison, the average three-bed semi apparently can take 7,500 bricks. That's if it's made of bricks.
I think I'm going to write and make a suggestion to the housing issue up on the moon. And what I would suggest is climb down into a crater and start digging in a little bit. And you would make little caves all over the place, and that would be much, much easier than trying to build with bricks. So I hope somebody's listening. I'll send you the email address later on for any funding that might...
Thank you. They've also tried other ingredients that would be available, namely urine and blood. But what are you going to eat? Bleed the astronauts or every so often to make starchweed. And as one of the researchers says, and anyway, astronauts probably don't want to be living in houses made from scabs and urine. The other thing is some of the ingredients you can find in tears. So if you cut the astronauts and make them cry, you can get some of the material for the starchweed. But anyway, we'll have to bring some bit of potato starch in it. A pinch of salt.
Now, in a bit of better news, now the UK Space Agency has decided to continue funding a project by Rolls-Royce as a long-term energy source for lunar bases. And the new boost to Rolls-Royce's research pot follows a previous $303,495, which is not really an awful lot, but it certainly will help. And the company hopes to have a demonstration model very shortly, and what they want to do is to make little miniature nuclear reactors for providing power for a moon base. So, the other thing they probably use is solar panels, as we use down here. Ideal. Point straight at the sun, you've got your power. So, there we go. So, good news for Rolls-Royce there, and the UK Space Agency having decided to put a little bit more money in the pot for this miniature nuclear reactor for the moon base, which is going to testing very shortly.
Thank you for that, John. Now, amateur astronomers are needed to help classify stars with Gaia's dark data. Now, the Gaia mission has collected data on millions of space objects, like stars and asteroids. In fact, the mission that was launched in 2013 and lies about 1.5 million kilometers from Earth has basically created the largest and most precise 3D map of the Milky Way. It's measured the position and brightness of 1.8 billion stars with unprecedented precision. So there's so much data, and not all machine learning and AI can classify it. So they want people to help with classifying the stars, because human eye is better at doing this than certain algorithms, as we say. Now, this is an ESA-funded science citizen project, and you can help, as I say, with the trying to help them sort of measure and determine variable stars, which are stars that change in brightness over time. And as analyzing individual sources is beyond the scope of the Gaia Consortium, you, as a citizen scientist, will look over images and graphs to classify stars' brightness changes, colors, and other variables over time. And, of course, you may also identify incorrect classifications made by the automated algorithms. If you want to help in any way, you could make a big discovery yourself. Mm-hmm. It is possible. It has been done. Go to Zooniverse. Probably you may have heard of that before. That's Zooniverse, which is a platform which projects with projects where people power the research. Actually, John, there's no need to sign in or create an account. After entering the platform, you can learn how to look at the graphs and data and classify each variable. So if you want to do your bit for science, go to Zooniverse.
Yeah, I was watching the Professor Brian Cox program of the universe over the last number of weeks, and I've been enlightened, I think, of the world of black holes and things like that. So I'm doing a little bit of research. I'm going to come back to you in the next week or two with a little bit of research as to what happened before the Big Bang. And there's something to get your heads scratching. Now, I don't know if you remember this, Ben, but in 2001, the Mars Odyssey orbiter went to the red planet almost 22 years ago. That was way back in 2001. And the spacecraft has done a mere 94,000 loops around the planet. That's about equivalent to 1.37 billion miles. It sounds even better in kilometres, which is 2.21. And it's very hard to manage what fuel they have actually used in this, because there is no fuel meter, if you like, or a fuel dial. And they've had to work on a little bit of maths on this as well. So it went to space with 225 kilos of a thing called hydrazine propellant, because there's no fuel gauge. Engineers have been scratching their heads and have used a variety of ways to infer how much hydrazine has been consumed over time. Now, every now and again they have to make a tiny adjustment, so they have to squirt a little bit out into the space just to adjust the trajectory due to gravitational pulls around Mars, etc. So there's no conclusion just yet, but I'm sure we're going to find out pretty soon. And Odyssey doesn't actually need a lot of hydrazine to get on any given day, but solar panels help it as well. And there are three strategically placed reaction wheels which help the orbiter point its science instruments at the Martian surface as well. So it's doing a Trojan job. And it was launched way back in 2001, and we sort of forget how long it's been up there. Mm. And 200 kilos of fuel over 20-something years, it's going to run out eventually. Yeah. And then what will happen to it? But we'll keep an eye on that one too.
Thank you, John, for that. I think that's all the time we have this evening, if I'm not mistaken. Don't forget Irish Astronomy Week. Check out irishastronomyweek.ie. There's lots of events around the country. And I think coming up this weekend, there's a few. There's Cosmos 2023 is on, for example, and a few other events like that. For example, in the Phoenix Park Visitor Centre, there's the Irish Astronomical Society Astrophotography Exhibition that runs until the 26th. It's free entry. Lots of things. Check your local library. Check irishastronomyweek.ie. You won't be too far from anything. You'll find something interesting. There's no doubt about that at all. As I said, that's all the time we have. Thank you, John, for your news items and for running the sound desk this evening. And thanks to James Sweeney and to Conor Lennon for making this show available on astronomy.ie and from the people here who put it up as a podcast also. Don't forget our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China, 9 o'clock, Bran Lynott with Threads, and 11 p.m, it's Nigel Wood with Ear to the Globe. And from midnight to 2 a.m, Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul. It's called After Hours. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening and say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.